mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 436. I'm Adam and I haven't got a quote because you lot have been rushing me into doing the show when I'm not ready. And here's Rhys Parton.
If you could get me an A to Z of the universe, I'll be able to stick my fingers straight. No, I've got no idea.
Mary Lang.
They like it more when you struggle.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
The Toymaker would approve.
Yeah, I thought you'd pick up on that one. All right, I'll see if I can find a quote randomly through the subtitle system when I'm not ready.
Well, there's one perfectly for that.
What, I'm not ready?
Yeah. Oh. To hear I'm not ready for today when she sees the TARDIS.
Hang on, I think I've got one coming up. Got one coming up. Oh, no, it's not loading up the subtitles. Why is that not coming up?
I don't know.
Is that English? Oh, off. Who told him? Who turned them off? I guess there's an option for English United States. Well, surely that's not English, is it? All right, let's see if I can get this. Is it going to play the subtitles now? No, it isn't. Oh, jeez.
My subtitles come up automatically.
Well, so did mine, but this is on iTunes player, and it's coming up. It says subtitles auto-recommended, but it's not automatically playing them. Oh, I give up. Forget the blimmin'... stupid quote. Whose idea was having a stupid quote anyway? Right then,
me, so, about 9 years ago.
Well, there's no point in talking about, by the way, Lillian Robbins says finally. Right then, before I get very, very cross, Mary, because she's got a very calm voice, is now going to explain to the listeners why it is not possible to get the show started at 8 p.m.
Okay, Lillian and all who are tuning in late. Are we tuned in late? Adam does watch the new Doctor Who episode before setting up his equipment and getting us online. And since that setup and getting online takes a little bit during this period of time anyway, while Doctor Who is still putting out new episodes, we will probably always be a little late. How about that?
Yeah.
All right, so point to Mary. Oh, talking of points, before we get on with the episode, I have some points to add and deduct. We're not doing a quiz, but we're going to do the best co-presenter of the show competition this week. So let's have a look, see who interrupted Doctor Who while it was on the 20 megabyte crew feed. Oh, yeah, Rhys Parton, so that's minus one. Who else have we got here?
Just because you don't know how the mute function works, you can't play
it. It would still vibrate next to me. Kirby, what a surprise, Kirby, who was already on one for doing something good. Oh, yeah, he posted the request feed for feedback on things, so he got a point for that. So give him that.
Yeah, I did it late.
Yeah, but then he gets deducted because he replied to Rhys, and Rhys then said something else, which unfortunately during this sets Deb off, saying, I'm going to watch this program! And then Kirby said something else, which puts him on minus one, and then another one said sitting by, minus two, and then Rhys said something about tending to minus three. So at the moment, Mary's in the lead with one and... Kirby second with minus two and Reese's last with minus three. So there you are. That's the current point system.
Woo-hoo?
For pardon.
Woohoo? Question mark.
Right. This week we're going to be looking at a Doctor Who story. Title which of, oh, can you hear me? Yes. No, I didn't want to say it like that because you lot would say yes, we can. Because I'm pretty sure that when I connected Rhys to the Skype system, I said to him, "Can you hear me?" I couldn't hear him basically, and then none of us could hear him, and now we can. So let's see if Lillian's understood and what Deb. Lillian said, "I know, I'm just messing with y'all." I think I should consume some chocolate in a minute. Oh, I've got a Cadbury cream egg over here. I'll leave it for later. Right then. So
there wasn't a whole lot of half-priced chocolate at the grocery store this week. I was disappointed.
Oh, you mean Valentine's half-priced chocolate? Yeah. Wow. That's not Cadbury's, is it? Although M&S chocolate is very nice. Okay, so Can You Hear Me begins with some, well, sort of a drone shot over Pardon?
I was agreeing with you.
Aleppo, a drone shot in 13. God knows I managed to get a drone over Aleppo in Syria.
I know. 13. The doctor must have taken it with her.
Amazing shot. I tell you what, it does look a little bit like one of those classic model shots from the 1970s Doctor Who. In fact, it reminded me of slightly better rendered. Do you remember a Doctor Who story we watched a while back called The Pirate Planet? And we were sort of taking the mickey taking the mickey out of the models for where they were
places. Yeah, still loved that episode.
It was a bit like that, but slightly better rendered.
That's still one of my favorite episodes of all time. Yes.
Yeah, we know that. And then we see some lovely shots of what looks like a nun running through. It's not a nun, but running through and panicking a little bit because something's coming.
None of that, thank you.
And she's like having a chat with this woman who is sort of dismissing her concerns about whatever it is that's coming. Yeah, it's a monster. But anyway, and then night falls and gets a bit creepy. And this nun whose name I forget.
Tahira
is wandering around trying to rewarn this woman who was flippantly sort of dismissing what she was saying, and then this spooky big claw thing comes down and grabs her around the face.
That we all thought was a Selene for a while.
I never thought that.
Yeah, there was a lot of people were seeing the claw in previews and going, ah, Selene, you're back.
Oh, I never thought that at all.
Did they have claws that dangerous?
Must have been a Slovene who'd had been on a severe diet, which is very un-Slovene-like.
Yeah. Must have trimmed their nails for a bit.
Yeah. Anyway, so whilst after this, you know, this creature, which looked a bit fierce, had done something with this woman, we didn't quite see what it had done with the woman. We just assumed that the woman had been killed. It creeps up to... I'm going to have to write her name down because I never remember. Where's her?
Tahira.
Tahira, it's easy.
It is easy if you... Not me. Where the bloody hell is my pen? Tahira. It sounds like a name of a sort of perfume, doesn't it? Where's it? You never... Oh, I've got a piece of paper here. This is podcasting at its highest standard.
About to say.
Tahira. There you go. I've written it down there. Yeah, Tahira.
You'll still forget it.
Only if that piece of paper moves. Yeah, so it goes up to and basically.
What's a piece of paper doing here?
Now she could have said something quite funny here, like something on the lines of "God, you could really do with a tic tac," as it breathes in her face, and then it's into the title sequence, which goes something like "dum dum dum." And it's written by Charlene James and interfered with by Chris Chibnall. as most of these stories are.
Yeah, I think that the last little segment is definitely his interference.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're back in Sheffield.
And the Doctor's Nightmare.
Back in Sheffield, and the TARDIS materialises, and, of course, this gives everybody, well, not the Doctor, obviously, but the others, a chance to go and see some old friends, family, or whatever. And as they leave, the TARDIS goes all black, and this figure appears. I love the way it's sort of, you know, it's like one of those dust. I've seen that effect using quite a lot of things in Doctor Who. That sort of this goes to dust, but this, instead of going to dust, does the opposite. Comes from dust and then goes to dust again.
Yes.
I'm trying to think where I've seen that effect before. But
those creatures in time flight, because it kind of reminded me of that, the way it appeared.
Kirby's going,
The story where... The Face the Raven.
That's it.
Yes.
Indeed. Oh, yeah.
But I think it's been used in other ones as well, where things are turned to dust. Oh, no, it was in Avengers, not Endgame, the previous one.
Infinity War.
Yeah, although they didn't have these little things. But it was, obviously they added the floating dust effect to it as well, but there was a similar sort of...
I feel
of...
like Harry Potter got there years ago, though.
Harry Potter, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, Yaz goes and sees her family, her sister. Do we sort of get a hint?
Her sister.
Yeah, her sister. And do we get a hint that somebody in her family's died at some point? Because there's sort of...
No.
Well, I got that hint. Obviously got it wrong. And then Ryan goes to see his old friend that we saw in episode one. Ryan goes to have a game of cards with what we would presume is some of his old workmates. And, they're just sort of hanging around with their friends. But the Doctor goes to Aleppo. So I got that. I remember that one.
I loved where she was talking to the companions and they weren't there.
Yes. No. Oh, they're not here. Who am I going to show off to?
Yeah, I love that aspect of the Doctor. Anyway, she's having a look around. She meets the grizzling Tahira, who's curled up in the corner, grizzling, and looks up in the thing. And as when me and the fam were watching this, we said, "Oh, look, it's magic stuck to the ceiling. What's he doing up there?" it did reminded me a little bit. You haven't probably been watching Doctor Who long enough to remember this, but there was a story which featured Pauline Collins as Queen Victoria, and that where she coined the phrase Torchwood, and they had this werewolf locked in a cage. Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of that.
I don't know about that.
Tenth Doctor and Donna. That was a Doctor and Donna episode.
No, it was a Doctor and Rose story. That was.
Oh, Rose, you're right. Mm. Rose.
I remember this fact, but our review of that was Ben's last regular episode on the show.
Bloody hell. Have you got that in your database, Kirby?
I will check.
Oh, God, I wish I'd mentioned it now. Right, anyway, so. Meanwhile, while playing this game of cards, Graham has a bit of a funny turn, like Time Lord energy starts floating around his head. And
he gets a vision of Storm.
A very pretty sort of woman, I suppose you call it, or girl, with brown hair, very pretty, is floating around. And Ryan is having a gaming night with his friends. And he's starting to realise that not everything is right with his friend, who seems a bit down. Yeah. And he tries to talk to him, but can't seem to really get through to him. Hang on, just not fast forwarding properly.
Correct. That was Tooth and Claw was the last regular episode that Ben was in. He skipped about seven of them.
Was that why? Did he have a row with you?
On like every seven or eight stories for a few weeks.
Did he have a row with you on that one then, Reese?
No, I just remember. You were sobbing wildly because he was leaving. And
oh, he had a job, didn't he? He got a job.
He did, yeah. Don't swear like that.
Good memory, Riz. Good memory.
Yeah, it's amazing what effect this show has on people.
That was 2012.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Kirby. anyway, so, and then we're back with, what's her name again? The policewoman, what's her name again? I'm being facetious here. Yeah, is that somebody, whatever her name is?
Finally we got some backstory for her in this episode. There's something at least.
So, having a bit of sisterly bonding. And then while she's asleep, she...
with Sonia, she sees this sort of... She hates customers.
This sort of vision of a police car on this long, long road with a police woman stood holding a hat. And then this girl just in the middle of the road. Very mysterious. And she wakes up, and then
that was confusing the first time I saw it. Second time, it made perfect sense.
I think it's meant to be, though. Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to find out. It's meant to be confusing, so you can find out why it isn't confusing. I think. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway,
yes.
She then wakes up to see this sort of bald-headed figure.
It's a figure we last saw already, kind of in the Doctor Who universe, in Torchwood: Children of Earth.
Was it?
Yeah, he was playing the scientist type guy who was fascinated by the 456.
Oh, wow, really? Go back.
I've only seen that series once, so well done for that.
It's a great series.
It was. Yeah. Peter Capaldi killed his family in that one.
Yeah.
And Yanto died in that one as well. Mm-hmm. Coming to FancyCon, by the way. Just sort of trying to segue into that particular fact. Yeah, so this character... sinister and scary looking is watching, rather pervily watching, yes. Meanwhile, he is watching.
He then disappears again.
He disappears again, but then he watches Ryan's friend having a sleep.
Tibbo? Hey? Is it Tibbo?
I don't know.
And then he fingers him.
Thank you, Kirby. There's a better way of doing that. Anyway, so his fingers come off in a very, very creepy way. And I think go into his ears, don't they? And then they come back to his hand.
Yes, and why didn't he just use one finger?
Oh,
you don't have five 5 years.
I don't mind him using all of them. Thank you very much, Kirby. It's ruining the air of it. Anyway, so he disappears, and the Doctor and Tahira are still skulking around this sort of medieval Syrian town. Aleppo, was it? I can't remember. And while skulking around this medieval Syrian town called Aleppo,
the Doctor is obviously one of the lesser known Marx brothers.
The Doctor gets a phone call from Graham. Now the weird thing about this, and I don't mind this phoning thingy, but she's in a different time. So how does she get a specific phone call at that time?
Well, just like Rose's phone.
I know, but it's a bit confusing how that is their current time.
Master.
What?
It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
I know, but...
And she's standing right next to the
Even saying that, I don't mind it, really. Like, because it covers science fiction fantasy, but it's still at the back of my mind, is that the exact right time? It could be phoning her at any time during her timeline.
It was necessary for the plot.
So you're saying she could have received the call in the next episode, halfway through, running away from Frankenstein or whatever.
Indeed. If you remember, in Peter Capaldi's first story, the Doctor called the Doctor from the phone hanging on outside the TARDIS just before he regenerated.
It was a great moment. I love that moment. Yeah. I know a lot of people don't, but I do.
Yeah. I like it.
Good.
I like it too. Anyway, so... Meanwhile, the Doctor then, after the conversation she has, because obviously Graham tells her what's been going on with him, she has a group conversation with Yaz and Ryan, and then gets a bit excited and scared at the same time, picks a bit of something off a wall, what was it?
It was a bit of fur from the
I thought it was
creature.
A spider. Anyway, and then takes... Tahira into the TARDIS with her, and... I don't like it when she just casually takes people out of time into the TARDIS these days, but she seems to do it quite a lot now. And she examines his hair, but she picks
she
up the others.
The
we don't see her pick up the others, but she does pick up the others.
She remarks later about getting all the people out of the TARDIS jacuzzi.
Yes.
Who's in the jacuzzi?
Yeah,
the
I like
the
that one.
Later on.
Yeah.
I did like that comment. Anyway, so meanwhile, because Graham's had this sort of weird experience, she attaches Graham to the chameleon arch. Oh, sorry, no, the TARDIS psychic circuits.
You know, they should have kept the psychic circuits the way they used to be, because then it could be another reference to fingering.
Oh, Kirby, right. Point deducted for being smutty. So he's on -3 now. I should have deducted a point on the previous occasion, but I didn't. So it does look like the chameleon arch, which we saw in the best episode of Doctor Who in the last few years, a few weeks ago. And anyway,
Master.
So God. Yep. Phone's ringing.
Whose phone?
Mary's.
Yes.
Master.
Yes.
Apparently, while they were filming that sequence with the telepathic circuits, they were having problems keeping those suction cups on his head.
Okay.
and Jodie was really pushing hard, and it was hurting.
And she said, "Thank God I'm not a real doctor, otherwise I'd just be hurting my patients."
So she uses this psychic thing to enable the TARDIS to find out the source of it all, basically. And they're on this, they find their way.
She finds Starkiller Base.
What?
She finds a base in space, and I was making a
base in space.
You mentioned that in your reaction video. I don't know what Starkiller Base is.
Reese is a poet, and he didn't know it.
Have you not seen The Force Awakens?
A while ago.
Okay.
Yeah, once.
Jesus.
Maybe twice. Maybe twice at a push.
But it's the big base in that Star Wars movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've not been impressed by the more recent Star Wars.
Do you know
movies.
What? Never mind Star Wars. Point deduction for Kirby.
Rogue
talking
One.
About
I
something
loved,
completely
I loved
different.
Rogue One.
God, you're really dropping points rapidly here, Kirby. Just like to point out. Yes, what it reminds me of is an old nightclub I used to go in about 1984-85 called Zany's. It's got the same sort of UV sort of lights on the floor and weird sort of bars around the dance floor and everything. Anyway, so the Doctor, Yaz, and
Fingers
Tahira
all over the place.
yeah.
sort of walk around this place, and the Doctor does a lot of commentary whilst this is going on, because there's a lot, and there's a sort of a vision of two planets colliding, I suppose.
It's not a vision, it's just the view outside.
Okay, it's a bit like the Earth and the Moon, or how the Moon came about, Kirby, and two planets collided, which caused the Earth to start rotating and the Moon to be created. The Moon was once a planet. Never mind, moving on. Yeah, the Doctor's a bit of commentary, and just moving on forward a bit. And then they find that within whatever they're looking at, there's this sort of ball thing that looks a bit like, I don't know if you watched a film called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, or incorrectly named the Sorcerer's Stone, where there's this Quidditch ball thing. I think it's the big one that they have to pass around each other to
that
score.
The Quaffle?
Is it what it's called? Quaffle. Yeah, it looks a bit like that.
That's what we do with this show all the time.
That's what Kirby does with the show. Anyway, within that quaffle, as Kirby calls it, is this woman with the white hair and the beautiful face, who's grizzling a little bit. She appears to be trapped within this thing. And then the Doctor notices around the whole of this spaceship are lots of fingers attached to things. Yes. Severed fingers attached with wires and stuff like that. And then this ball comes down from the ceiling, and she carries on commentating on it. And then while all this is going on, Tahira wanders around the spaceship and sees the monster thing that she was making friends with. Actually, when it's sat there, it looks a bit more like a star in the face than it does magic, to be fair. And then that
make for great review material, but I quite like that this episode actually had some science fiction technobabble in it. We haven't had that in Doctor Who for a while.
Yes. And then the bald-headed bloke turns up, and it appears that he's got some sort of connection with the beautiful lady with blonde hair. Anyway, he sends his fingers out to get some of the people that are in the room. So Yaz then is transformed to the road where that the girl. Who is the girl? I can't remember. Is it her sister?
It's a sister.
It was her sister. I said it was her sister. You said it wasn't. Is it the one that she was speaking to in the flat, or a dead one?
Nope, it's the same one.
Oh, it's the same one.
It's Sonya.
Oh, she's
just
different.
One sister.
She's got shorter hair.
She's the one who called the police.
She got shorter hair.
Yeah.
So that confused me.
It's a very different hairstyle. She does look very different.
Yeah, she does look very different. That's why I thought it was a different person.
She called the police, and the nightmare is that she didn't call the police.
Yeah.
So she sees a very fierce-looking police officer there as well, and she's looking backwards and forwards. And then Ryan, meanwhile, is stuck in a fiery environment and sees his friend very, very old. And that's great makeup on the friend, I have to say.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, it was
a
different actor.
Is it?
I was going to ask, was it makeup, or did they get a different actor and they've got the guy to do a voiceover?
Yeah, Bwam Thingang
beg your pardon?
But old Tebow was played by Willie Jonah.
Ah, okay.
Well, I tell you what, great casting.
Yes. Yes.
Good idea, too, to have the smoke all over the place, because it hides it a little bit, too.
And is it then he sees one of the creatures that we saw from the worst episode of the series so far?
Yeah.
The worst episode of all time, yes.
I wouldn't say of all time, but assess that after seeing the whole series and getting off my high horse about the messages that you have in every episode. I mean, then we come to... Sorry, calm down.
When we finish the journey and we make our list of worst and best episodes, it's going to be really close to the bottom.
Okay, well...
Who says we're going to do the list?
I'll decide that later on. Right, back to this one, though. Where do you go? Oh, yeah, so Graham wakes up. And he's in hospital with a drip attached to his arm, and then Grace is there. It's great to see.
Am I the only one for a second who thought it might have been Ruth before she turned around?
Ruth.
Yeah, for a second.
Grace Doctor from.
Oh, you know? No, I didn't get that. Well done, Reese. No, I didn't pick up on that one. No.
I did until she turned around.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, he's just being told that he's got cancer and he's not got long left.
A couple
doctor,
hours.
Meanwhile, yes.
Yeah. And then she asks, why didn't you save me? And I got annoyed at that because he was trying the whole episode. He was like, no, don't chase that alien.
But it's a dream, isn't it? It's a nightmare. So yes. that makes sense. So the Doctor hasn't been done in by any fingers. He's just wandering around still having a conversation with Baldy. And who does look great, that actor, by the way. He really does. He's really good.
It was great to have an actual villain in an episode.
Yes.
Yeah, he's really good.
And it was great that he name drops not only the Celestial Toymaker, but the Eternals and the Guardians.
Because he is indeed an Eternal. You see, this is what I was saying while watching this, when he said about Eternals, I said, oh my God, it's not the Black Guardian, is it? Now, that's happened a few times in this series.
It's got no crow in his head.
That I thought, no. Yeah, well, there's been the crows, you know, the birds in that previous story, and I thought, well, Black Guardian's got something. Because remember, that was that animatronic one watching them on the beach, and that did look very much Armageddon. What's the Armageddon story when Romana was Mary Tam and then wasn't Mary Tam anymore? What's that one called? Was it the Armageddon Factor, or was that a Star Trek story?
It sounds like a Star Trek one.
Oh, never mind. That one, anyway. I just thought it reminded me of, because the Black Guardian in that story kept on changing into a crow. Just saying. And occasionally has appeared as a crow, and I thought that could have been him. But anyway, so he sort of gets the Doctor to release his buddy, and my thingy's just stopped.
Yes, Armageddon Factor.
Is that what the Doctor is? Was I right?
Yes. Yes.
Thanks for verifying that, Kirby. You get a point back. Well done.
The Star Trek episode has a similar name.
Yeah, all right, thank you. Taste of Armageddon, that's what the other one's called. So, yeah, the great...
Another point.
There's a great look to the lady, the lady Eternal woman. She's very beautiful. Normally, I don't like blonde hair on black ladies. I just don't think it suits them. But because this character is something different, it does actually work really well. So she's gorgeous. And also, where she is gorgeous, that, again, adds to the sinisterness of the character. I love it. And I quite like that when they... There's a series I've been watching on Netflix called Lock and Key, in which the big baddie is an absolutely stunning woman, and it really does add...
Yeah, I need to watch that.
Do you? I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, the Star Trek episode is a taste of Armageddon.
No. Oh, no, I said that, right? Point deductive for just trying to sound really clever, and I'd already said that. So he's on my
By the way, speaking of Star Trek, I just caught up last night with Picard. It is fantastic.
The what? Oh, Picard, yes. When you said Picard, I thought you meant the card.
I
can't remember any comedians being in
I almost
Star
wish
Trek.
we were discussing that instead.
Mary.
Now, this is a good episode.
All right, can we just carry on right then? Right, so yes, there's please. A story that was told by these Eternals to the Doctor, in which we saw this sort of like cartoony effect. The two planets and the characters.
The obviously Tale of Three Brothers, right?
It's superbly done. I absolutely love that sequence.
Yes, I liked it.
And it reminded me of other... That's sort of been done once before. I don't know if in Doctor Who or in another genre or franchise, but it's really, really good.
Harry Potter.
Was it?
Yes.
We're in Harry Potter.
The tale of the three brothers.
Oh yes, the one that became the book.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, very good. I still like it. And the Doctor then gets tied up, but of course she's been very good friends with Houdini, so I didn't think she was going to stay tied up for very long. And it's quite funny that there's little fingers hovering in midair, and it just comes flying at her,
and then she rolls her eyes too.
Yeah. So they go on a mission to
Master.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You completely skipped the very important thing there.
Oh, go on then, because you were talking at me at that point, Kirby.
The doctor's dream of the Timeless Child.
Thank you. Do you know why I missed that? Because you were talking about Star Trek during the part I was actually going through that bit.
Also, pretty sure it hasn't happened yet. They disappear, and then they're on the street for a bit. Then it happens.
Yeah.
Thank you. Ah,
no,
thank you. Reese point
tied
gets
tied up before she does her Houdini.
It's
thing.
A point for Reese for putting Kirby right. I love it.
I'm watching it right now.
So am I.
Well, we're trying to watch it, but somebody keeps on talking about Star Trek. I just got to turn my fire off. I'm using my other without using a certain device. There we go. So these Eternals had, what was the other one? I don't care about their names. Forget it. Baldy and Blondie.
It was never mentioned in the
I never caught Baldy and Wig Wearer.
Baldy and Blondie, we'll call them.
Her name was supposed to be Rakaia.
I don't care. We'll call him Baldy and Blondie. Her costume is great.
On the same street that Salad Man throws his salad at Tim Shaw.
Yeah, I tell you what. While watching this bit, I thought, you know, because they were sort of hinting about things, I thought, oh my God, is it the Rani? Because I keep on thinking they're going to bring the Rani back at some point. You know.
Yes.
Don't hold your breath.
Anyway, so they go on a mission to, you know,
maybe Mary Shelley is the Rani.
Shut up. They go on a mission to just distribute nightmares to people. The Doctor, meanwhile, is sort of getting a vision of, I suppose it must be the Timeless Child, or it may not be. Mm-hmm. And Yaz,
that they say the Timeless Child while seeing the vision.
Well, it might not be as well. It might be a red herring. It's a nightmare, not necessarily real, Kirby. It's not it's not a vision of the future that actually happened. She's having a nightmare. Got your thinking, didn't it? Anyway, the doctor manages to get a magic.
Well, I'm thinking that they may have mentioned it during the episode that you've seen that we haven't.
No, shut up. So she gets out, uses a sonic screwdriver, frees everybody else.
That's the one bit I didn't like about the episode, how the screwdriver went from her pocket to her hand.
Freeze.
A bit irritating, but I don't care.
Yeah, this doctor has a lot of magic, you know.
Freeze. It's
a
science fiction fantasy TV.
It is. Nothing wrong with having a sonic screwdriver, but it can't come out of the pocket.
Doctor is a Time Lord and does have psychic powers. Just saying. she does.
Sure.
Yet she can't do a phone call in Adam's mind.
No, she does, and she's been developing these powers as she's got older and older and older. If you remember, there are Time Lords we've had in the past that have been more powerful than the Doctor. Rassilon, for instance, who the original Rassilon, was able to do sort of supernatural things. And so is the Doctor. But she's a goodie. Anyway, so all the others are freed, even the people that we saw getting taken earlier on in the story. Mm-hmm. And
they're the ones who end up in the jacuzzi at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the Doctor thinks up a way of sorting out these people. Hang on. Who, like I say, the nightmares are being distributed here. And you said, this is the point in which you can say, Kirby, about the things I missed. What did I miss? Sorry?
I don't know.
You said I missed some stuff. No, the Timeless Child. The did I not miss it?
I was talking about the Timeless Child part.
And then there's a scene in which Blondie, where she's distributing these nightmares, almost merged into the Shadow Monster from Stranger Things Series 2. I'm glad you know that reference, Reese. At least you've watched some television in your time. While she's distributing these nightmares.
The thing is, I'd like to watch Stranger Things with Julia, and she doesn't want to watch it.
Well, I watch Stranger Things on my own.
That you'd be fine watching on your own and then finding any excuse to watch again.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I watched it. Isabella watched it on her own. I watched it on my own. And we've watched it all at different. So Deborah watched it at one pace. Maybe when I was on the end of series two, she was during series one. And, you know, so you can watch it on your own. It is allowed.
Yeah, Fred's watched it on her own.
Well, there you go then. Watch it on your own. And it's probably best to, because
it's just trying to find the time.
If you watch it with someone, then they can spoil it, and you don't want to be spoiled with Stranger Things, especially when you watch it.
I was irritating Julia last night because I kept noticing all the Easter eggs in Star Trek Picard. And
yeah, they do go in the shops quite early nowadays, the Easter eggs. We've got a load in our shop. It's a bit irritating when we haven't actually hardly finished Valentine's Day, and the Mother's Day is coming up soon. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. So the Doctor has a bit of a word, shall we say, with Baldy and Blondie. And then Tahira walks in. This is in the square in Aleppo. That's the right name for the place, isn't it? And they all get a bit smug, all the TARDIS crew a bit smug with this. Because what's the Doctor? Doctor's got this sort of device in her hand, actually this sort of glowing ball thing.
That was controlling the collision of the planets.
Yeah, and she's got that in her hand, and she's threatening them with it. And then she uses the sonic screwdriver to transform them all back into this little prison, because that's basically what it is, isn't it? Again, I forgot to mention this because you kept on talking over me, that when they arrived at the spaceship, I thought, oh my God, it's Sharda, because it was a prison ship. We forgot to mention this, it was a prison ship. And this blonde-haired lady was a villain, even though she came across as being quite sweet, only because she was crying. Anyway, the Doctor zaps them back into prison, basically. And everybody's sort of
along with one of the monsters.
Yes,
from
which I quite liked, because they could now got to share a little cell with this monster. So, and then they all sort of go and sort of have a final conversation with their friends, who have obviously had a very difficult time.
We've got three good segments, and then a not so good segment.
Allow me to continue.
I'll tell you why that's good.
Can I continue, please?
Doesn't matter. Go on.
So obviously they've all had issues with mental health, and these sequences are them remembering how these mental health issues were resolved, things that inspired them to become healed from these issues. And of course the nightmares are all part and parcel of that, I mean, of mental health situations. And so she what's her name again, that Yaz, that's the one. She was she was obviously inspired by this policewoman to become a policewoman herself, and that changed her life, and she wanted to go and meet her and see how she was getting on and stuff. And then Graham goes back to the Doctor and tells her his nightmare was cancer, and the Doctor doesn't know quite how to deal with this sort of information.
To the point where the BBC had to apologise.
That was ridiculous. The Doctor's not human. So she tries to sort of pass it off and just sort of flippantly, you know, remove it from the conversation, basically.
And, well, I didn't get the fact that she was flippant about it.
No.
I think she was just being the Doctor.
Yeah, she was being awkward. I'm flippant. I think they were saying it was flippant. She was being awkward. She was being an alien, basically.
Yeah, she was just being awkward.
Yeah,
I didn't have as much problems with it as the world seemed to have with it.
Let me continue. Anyway, so off they go and continue their adventures. Now, I will say that I was completely wrong to whinge about. I know there's been a few messages that were a bit irritating during this series, but the message for the end of this story, it's quite moving for people who have had mental health issues. And on this instance, the things that are going on with young people just taking their lives for no reason whatsoever, because unfortunately, in some ways, it's become trendy to do that, because you hear, oh, someone's done that, I can do that, that's it, that's my troubles done. I nearly did that when I was 20, 21. I was so ready to do it that I went out for work one day. I was a milkman, and my job as a milkman was to place the milk on the doorstep and take the milk bottles away. But because I knew I wouldn't be alive the next day, I just left all the empty milk bottles on the doorsteps. But something, fortunately, happened that meant that I didn't do that. But other people have followed through. And if I'd followed through with it at that particular time, I wouldn't have had the life I've had now, which has not been too bad, to be fair. Recently, we've had Caroline Flack, who was a beautiful 40-year-old TV presenter, who has decided that she couldn't take the stigma she was getting from certain tabloid newspapers. I presume that's why she's committed suicide. And that's had a big impact on people in Great Britain, because she was a very vibrant, talented young woman. And
Adam, can I probe a little bit where you're concerned? What was your prime motivation? Was it because others were doing it, or because life didn't seem to have meaning?
Deeply depressed. I didn't think I was ever going to find love, and I just was very lonely, and I didn't think there was a future for me. I didn't think I could be loved, so I did that. So that was it. I just thought that's it for me. And people have various reasons for this, but basically it boils down to mental health, and there's different grades, reasons, types of mental health. And if this episode has inspired some people to go and speak to people and save their own lives and save families from the anguish of losing a relative who may have committed suicide or have lost or are suffering with relatives who are currently going through mental health issues, then this episode is probably one of the most important Doctor Who episodes of all time. And I'm going to let it pass. Even though I moaned about it initially, I now realise I was wrong to do so. It was a really good story. And the only thing at the time that I was really upset about was this message, because obviously we've had a lot of stories this series with messages. And I said, we'll take the message out of it. It's a really good story. Put the message back into it. It's a really good story. It's important that this particular issue is made aware to the public and inspires people to change their lives, or, you know, shows that there is a future for people. However, you know, down you might be, there's an avenue to go. Talk to someone. Get help. There is help out there. And
a moment,
please do
just
it.
Just a moment.
Yeah.
So where did you get help?
The next day, I didn't have as bad a day as the day I was having. I can't remember the precise thing, but I got help by myself. I used to write a diary at the time, and what I did, I decided I'd score the day, basically. So I'd write what happened in the day, and at the end of the page, it would have a score for how much I enjoyed the day and the score for how I felt out of 10 or whatever, 5 or 10. And my mission was to get those scores up high all the way through. And because I'm quite a competitive person anyway, I just kept on trying. And that sounds odd to do that, because you might not think it's possible to do that, but it was my mission to push those scores up and keep them up and keep them up. And in the end, they just stayed up, and they were always 9-10s. And when they were always 9s and 10s, I thought, well, okay, mission accomplished. And I stopped writing the diary. There was another reason I stopped writing the diary, because Deb kept reading it. But she was part of the reason why the scores stayed up, because I met her. It was quite a long process, but it worked. But I didn't. The only reason I knew I had a mental health issue is because somebody told me I was depressed, and that triggered a massive bout of emotion. And emotion I couldn't control for quite a long time. And it was painful, and I just couldn't live my life because of the pain from it. And also I was obviously very insecure and lonely, and didn't think that I'd ever find somebody who would love me for myself. And there were other reasons I can't talk about, that I was, you know, sort of in a relationship that wasn't possible to be sustained, and there was loads of other bits and bobs. But fortunately something happened, and I was able to regain my life. So there's always a corner in life.
We're all very grateful that happened.
Well, yeah, it's a case of, you know, it's when you lose someone, it's very, very painful. And you have to live through that pain. And the pain gradually gets easier and easier. You just don't, you know, if you think about it, you sit back and think, like when my granddad died. If I really sit down and think about when my granddad died, I will get emotional. Not as emotional as I was at the time, but yeah, it never goes away. It's still there. And I suppose these sort of feelings of you know, they're always in the back of your mind, or something might trigger it. But hopefully I'll know what to do if it ever happens again. I'm very lucky, I've got a lot of people around me that you know, keep me sustained. But it wasn't good, and unfortunately it only happened that once. My dad, on the other hand, was a bipolar, and he was undiagnosed bipolar in 1962-63, something like that, and they used to treat it in those days by electric shock treatments to the head, and didn't do him any good. It just got worse and worse. Went to turn to alcohols, cigarettes, and he died as of a heart attack from his way of life of alcoholism and smoking. But initially, because they treated his bipolar with electric shock treatment, whereas now it might be treated with drugs, which is probably a better way to do it, I suppose. But yeah, it's But basically, the message of the story is really important, I think, because everybody knows somebody. It's like everybody knows somebody who had cancer. Everybody knows somebody who has mental health problems. So,
oh, yeah.
As far as the story goes, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed all the new characters, and I enjoyed the new baddies, new monsters. Again, the way the story looked was good. I'd say it was a sort of a slightly above middling story, because we haven't had the, you know, a great series of you know, high flying stories. And I'm going to start coughing in a minute. So, Reese, what did you think?
I really liked this one. And I think, just to quickly defend your initial reaction to it, I think in this case, the message was actually really natural and organic, but it follows two episodes where the messages have been very on the nose, especially Orphan 55. That was really blatant.
They just took a hammer with that one.
Yeah, and look, I didn't mind that episode too much, and I completely agree with the message, but you've got to do it much more subtly. At least this had a reason for people like Yaz, especially, where, you know, this is the episode where we find the more about Yaz than any other episode from the past couple of years. And I thought it was really well done, quite naturally done, and of course she's going to have the emotional residue from having the nightmare initially at the beginning of the episode. And I thought that the way it was woven into the rest of the story was much better than just tacking it on at the end. There is one thing I do feel about this episode, and it's actually not much to do with the episode, just its placement in this era, but it would have been so much better to have it in their first year together and then put something like the Serengu conundrum now, because you have this episode to get to know people, and then you just have a runaround with that. I really enjoyed the Serengu conundrum. I think it's fun. But at the time, I was going, I don't know these characters, but if we got to know them last year, not even last year, last season, and then got, you know, that episode now, it would have been a better balance. But now they're giving us these episodes, and I feel like it might be the end of these companions' run, and it feels a bit late. I could be wrong about that. But
at least one is leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. But I really enjoyed this story. Like I said earlier, it had some good science fiction concepts in there, and that she explained things. There's a thing about the Chibnall era where things are just happening because, whereas now they explain that the stars were put into place, or the planets were put into place the way they were, and that this station they were on was an observation platform, as well as kind of like a prison ship so they can harvest the nightmares. I just thoroughly enjoyed that sort of thing. And then the performances were amazing, because mental health is one of those issues that really does need to be talked about, and a stigma needs to be broken. And it's something I appreciated as a young man in this world, is that two young men talked to each other about these problems. And it wasn't stated, but I had the impression that Ryan has gone to little meetings like that to discuss losing his loved ones, because he's lost so many people in his life. He's had so much trauma happen, so I reckon that's how he knew about this meeting that he could recommend. And I just think, I'm someone who struggles with mental health issues. I've been on and off different sorts of medication for depression, and I've got very severe anxiety, but you know, you just got to find a way to get on with life, and one of the best ways to get on with life is to talk to people and open up about it and be honest about it.
Yes.
This story really resonated with me, and as much as I really love Fugitive of the Dadoon from a Doctor Who fan point of view, because you had Jack, you had another Doctor, you had another TARDIS, and all these big surprises, but in many ways this one affected me the most this season, because of how there were some personal stories in there, and we're again finally learning about Yaz. We don't get enough with Yaz, and like I said, the timing's really bad, because I feel like there's going to be a big shake-up in the TARDIS soon. But it was just really sweet to see an episode like this. Oh, and the final scene, the one between Graham and the Doctor, I've seen a number of people criticize that, and obviously the BBC had to apologize, but ridiculous. I also thought I got a lot more insight into the 13th Doctor from that scene.
It's ridiculous.
She's great.
Apologize. I'm sorry.
When she's great when she's surrounded by a lot of people. Like in her first episode, she had the TARDIS team and Grace, and they're all standing like beside her, and she's really confident and really in command. And then in Resolution, she's got the same thing. And then earlier on in this episode, she's got Ryan, Yaz, and Graham, and Tebow. Is that Ryan's friend?
Tebow.
And Tahira. And that's when she's incredibly confident, and she's almost a bit cocky in the greatest way possible. I love seeing this doctor actually have a backbone. But then when she's dealing with somebody one-on-one, she actually struggles. And her saying that was actually kind of like, thank you for sharing your concern with me. I'm going to take note of that, and I'm aware of that, but yeah, I don't really know how to talk to you about that, so I'm going to show that I'm a bit nervous about dealing with one-on-one interactions.
And
we didn't know that about the 13th Doctor before now, but we do now, and I really liked that. Normally I have to piece things together from how Jodie plays the part, but now we know from the writing that she's best when she's saving the world instead of just one person, and maybe that's something she needs to work on. So maybe she'll have one companion next year.
Pretty sure she said she was socially awkward, though, didn't she?
Well, and if I can step in and say, just from my own experiences, I appreciated her reaction, because having been a nurse, and I have, you know, had so many people open up to me about their problems, and it is very awkward, because with many of them, you don't know how to respond except just to listen.
Yeah.
Now, she vocalized her awkwardness, you know. In the real world, we don't usually say the things she said, but she's saying what you're thinking, or many times what I'm thinking inside. It's like, I have no idea how to relate to you or how to appropriately respond, but I'll listen to you, you know, which is what she did.
I'm sorry, I just want to explain to listeners why I chuckled then, because I just saw something come up on the feed from Jeff Waddle. It said, ancient Chinese proverb says, man with hole in his pocket feel cocky all day. Sorry, this has suddenly distracted me from what you were saying. Sorry, Mary.
Yeah, so I really liked this episode. Somebody else can go now.
That's good. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to let Kirby start. I know he's going to be noisy. I'm just going to need to go into the other room and get a drink, because otherwise I'm going to be coughing for the rest of the afternoon.
So you're not going to listen to me?
I'll only be less than 10 seconds. Shut up. Right, off you go.
Kirby, he takes breaks whenever I'm talking anyway, so I'm used to it.
Yeah.
He's like the 12th Doctor. He takes standing up breaks when other people talk.
Well, yeah, one thing about this doctor saying that about being socially awkward, she said that before. And actually, I have felt that way myself. So I completely understood her attitude at that point. Anyway.
And the 11th Doctor was always awkward around Amy and Rory whenever they would get all emotional with each other.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Anyway, this story is very interesting, because I first watched it obviously a week ago, very late at night, and my initial reaction was I didn't like it at all.
Okay.
Which I found it confusing, particularly the Yaz on the road bit, and I just, so my attitude towards it has been strange for the past week until I sat down this morning and watched it again and loved it.
Okay.
Absolutely love this story. It's much better than my initial reaction.
Yeah.
I guess I was just tired, and it just goes to show, don't always go with your initial reaction to a story. Yeah. Maybe I'll like Orphan 55 someday if I watch it again.
I don't think Orphan 55 is that bad, but it's not it's not great. I don't think it's that bad.
No, it's not one of the better ones, but it is not bad, and I love the references to Eternals and Guardians and the Toy Maker,
I do too.
Of course.
Yeah, I like the fact they've done that, because it's like certain aspects of the history of Doctor Who that don't need to be covered greatly, just get forgotten, because it was a very important part of the series for 5 years, and then suddenly it's not mentioned anymore. I think they were mentioned in Torture, weren't they, the Eternals? But not in Doctor Who.
Yeah, they've mentioned the Eternals a couple of times. I think the Guardians also been mentioned in New Who at least once before this.
Oh, by the way, anyway, I forgot to give Rhys a point for his feedback. Sorry, Rhys. Carry on.
I really, really enjoyed it the second time around. And it's towards the top of the ones we've had so far.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Middling's are good, I'd say. You're done?
Yeah.
Okay, then, without further ado... Prepare yourselves, it's Mary.
Well, I too watched it twice. I didn't like it the first time, and I really did not like it the second time.
Oh, my.
I'm going to tiptoe lightly around that whole message about depression, because that is the one thing that I think is good about it. But other than that, my question is, where's the story? The introduction is intriguing. Then we have long exposition about the companions, about their long absences from their regular lives. And then lots more set up about the nightmares and the visions. So far, no story. So I'm wondering, where is this going? Then we go to the observation station, and I think, okay, here we go. The action will begin here. But no, more exposition to tell us about the station and the orb, and then more dreams and nightmares. And I'm asking, where is this going? The doctor meets Zelen, more exposition. Then the woman is released, and more exposition. Okay, now the real story will begin, I think, because they will devastate the Earth. They will conquer the galaxy. Something big is going to happen. But no, the doctor breaks her bonds rather easily, frees the others, and now the endless wrap-up. And so far still, nothing has happened. The creatures are quickly defeated. We revisit the dreams of all the companions, more exposition, and visiting the personal problems of the companions kind of turns this episode into like a public service announcement, except a real story. Except about the doctor leaving Graham kind of hanging. So it just seemed to me like this was just a really talky, explaining, constant delving, and nothing really happens. So I was so bored the second time through. It's like, okay, you know, when are we going to get on with it? And they never do. They never do. So like I said, I'm tiptoeing lightly around the depression message, but Doctor Who is turning into either, you know, hitting us over the head about the climate or the environment, or now it's about depression. And I think, you know, can we just do some adventures? Can we just, you know, have some fun?
When they did that, everyone hated it, Orphan 55.
Yeah, no, that wasn't fun. That was all environmental.
Most of it was an adventure until you got to that scene at the end where, if we don't change our habits, we're going to ruin the world and turn into a growly monster.
And that was the part of Orphan 55 that bothered me the least, because Doctor Who's done it before.
Well, I'll just say about this thing. I mean, I agree with Mary about the bashing over the head with about messages and stuff like that. But that's how I felt when I first watched this story. Another message, but it's just the sort of reasons for the message sort of overpowered my annoyance in the end because of recent happenings, and obviously me forgetting how mental health has affected myself and members of my family and friends, for that matter. So
I wouldn't mind messages like this periodically through the thing, but it just seems like every week after week, every episode comes with a major message they want to hit us with.
I remember the message episode literally 10 years ago was Vincent and the Doctor, which was the same message, oddly enough.
It was actually,
but it was the one of the season. Other than that, it was about arc, it was about adventures.
I agree with that. I mean, the thing is, it's, you know, even if to a certain extent the thing that annoyed me at the time was that I was thinking, well, you know, people who are currently suffering with mental health issues might want to watch Doctor Who to take them away from that, or any drama for that, anything on television to take them away from their, you know, the world they're in into another world. But I'm thinking that's probably true, but if bringing them back to reality within that, you know, that adventure and giving them a little bit of a nudge might save some lives. But there you go. Anything else, Mary? Sorry.
No, but I mean, can anybody tell me what the actual story was in this?
Kirby will. Oh, no, he won't.
I can tell you the story. The cold open was to establish that there were these creatures that, as they turned out, they were nightmares, which were created by Zelen, who then tried to lure the Doctor into it because she's very powerful and would be able to provide a lot of nightmare material to release the girl from her prison between the two planets. There's plenty of story there.
Yeah,
just because it took a long time to explain doesn't mean it wasn't there.
Other than the creatures at the very beginning, I never felt any threat of any kind throughout the episode. I just felt like it was just story after story after story being explained to me, you know, not anything actually happening.
I think the good thing about Doctor Who sometimes is certain people, each individual can to glean a certain different aspect of the story, you know, that suits them to a certain degree. I don't know. The only things I find a little bit irritating about current Doctor Who is these, it builds up a bit of pace and then you suddenly get these one-on-one conversations with random characters within the story. They have a very quiet moment together. We have this sort of little conversation, which I tend to drift away from. And then they pull it back in again with a bit of action or something like that. But that seems to be a trend at the moment. That you get these little one-on-one conversations. I think they do it in a lot of current dramas and stuff like that.
I remember Amy and Rory talking about wanting to leave the Doctor because they were missing out on a lot of life.
Mm. And who wrote that episode?
Yeah, they were even talking with each other about how, you know, we're getting older. While our friends, you know, are aging normally, we're getting older sooner and all that. Now, that isn't being brought up here, but here we have, you know, companions again feeling like they're missing out on their lives.
That's the only problem there should be. I don't get why they're missing out on months of their friends' lives. You're in a freaking time machine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because the Doctor can always return them back to the moment before they left. Yeah. But that's why Amy and Rory were aging faster than their friends.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that. But they keep saying in this that they keep missing months, but they shouldn't. Yeah. Got a time machine.
Yeah. Well, now with the Ninth Doctor, remember when Rose disappears? When he brings her back, her mother is very upset because she's been gone for months. So I don't, you know, so which is it? Does time pass or doesn't it, you know, for these people?
Sorry, I'm just answering a message from a customer.
I've got a bit of an odd question. It could be a bit odd. But yes. I've noticed among the reactors that I watch on YouTube when they watch these and then they talk about it, they keep describing a lot of episodes as filler episodes because it feels disconnected from the season arc. And I feel like that's starting to happen because a lot of other shows, such as Stranger Things or The Mandalorian or Picard, all tie in with each other a lot more than Doctor Who usually does. Doctor Who's about filler episodes. It's about turning up in a different time and place every time and telling a different story. But because other shows aren't like that very much anymore, everyone's going, I just want to hear the big story. I just want to get on with it. I don't want a filler episode.
I agree with you.
Well, in the early episode, when Moffat first took over, his story's built on each other. I didn't feel that anything was a complete step away filler episode. But I think he's the only one that's done that.
Okay. We'll move on to feedback. So we should go for the feedback that that we requested via the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group. Now, the funny thing in that Facebook group, the requests to join it from people, random people, shall we say, I'll just let anybody who wants to try and join this group, if you don't answer the questions, the questions that you're asked to enter the group, you don't get in, basically. So it's pointless sending requests to join the group. They're fairly simple questions. I believe one of them is, who's your favourite doctor? Another one would be...
Wonderful chap, all of them.
Who's your favourite co-presenter on the podcast and who's your favourite presenter? Things related to the podcast and Doctor Who. So, if you haven't watched Doctor Who or never listened to the show, you won't know that it's suitably to us. Somebody tried it by putting yes, no, three or something like that as the answers. Yeah, not going to get in.
John Pertwee. Yeah. I don't have a favourite presenter. And join.
Obviously, people who have joined a long time ago won't understand what these questions are. However, we did get somebody that was added today who did answer the questions. And I'm going to give them a shout out. They're probably not listening to the show, but we haven't done the shout out for members of the podcast for a while. Crystal Guster, she joined 8 hours ago and answered the questions. Yes, so did Javan John, Joel Bateman, Susan Taylor, Thomas Wilk, Smith Harkness, great name, Warren Green, Chris Mockridge, River Song, but they answered the questions. You know, you're going to get in if you answer the questions. So, yeah, so if you want to join the group, answer the questions, or you don't. How did Nick Joseph? Oh, I must have added him. Yeah, so I will add people that send me friend requests that are, you know, sci-fi fans and don't look like they're a bit too weird. And then as soon as you get accepted by me, you'll get added to the 20 megabyte group. And then if you
you're off the sci-fi,
then you start being a bit weird, you get weird, you get your friend request deleted, so but you're still left in the 20 megabyte Todrew podcast Facebook group, which you can join. Right, then now I can talk about the feedback that, because Kirby requested it and I pinned it to the top of the page. Ooh, you haven't done too bad, Kirby. So off you go then.
Oh, am I reading them?
Well, you normally do. So while you're doing that...
I don't normally do, but
yes, you
I
do.
Sometimes. Here, okay, hang on.
While you do... Okay, hang on. While okay. you're doing that, I'm just going to...
I was researching what Ian said last. So I was trying to...
So you were losing concentration in the show, is that basically...
Correct. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Robert Wince Jr. starts things off with the obvious humor. What did you say, Kirby? I can't hear you. There's a finger in my ear. And then he also says, someone should put the words on here from Minute Work. Who could it be now, since we're talking about mental health, our public PSA of the week? At least Vincent the Doctor was better. I love that song.
Yes.
Jeff Waddle, half great, knew what they were trying to do, but never quite got there. All powerful immortals are almost impossible to portray well on screen. Yeah, they've done that well. Pyramids of Mars is an all-time classic, but in reality, Sutek, the bringer of chaos and death throughout the universe, struggles to get out of a chair. And even then, he wouldn't have looked so powerful had it not been for Clara stopping his cushion from sticking to his bob.
Yep.
The fingers were creepy, the baddies were menacing to a point, the message of getting help for mental health issues is a great one, but it's all a bit garbled, should have either stuck with the horror aspect, the mental issues aspect, or the powerful Eternals aspect, not all three. Lori Nix says, how come the Doc can vanquish godlike immortals in the last 5 minutes of the story, but can't do crap the rest of the time? Asking for a friend. Jeff responds, they vanquished themselves or something. Lori responds, I think they were wasted. Hopefully they will escape from the Phantom Zone and return with a vengeance. Robert Wince Jr. says, finger food anybody or some lady fingers? And he
that
also
fish
says,
fingers and custard, thanks.
Well, think about the another finger reference I occurred to me watching it this morning was the TARDIS console room. All those fingers sticking up into the air.
All right, yeah.
Anyway, Robert Wince Jr., some of these episodes, including this, has a Torchwood feel to them, and Chris seems to be doing obvious stuff. He should have had Captain Obvious on as his guest star, like the Graham doctor talk about his cancer coming back, and the doctor was awkward. Captain Obvious should have stepped out and said, she's an alien and can't talk with humans. Punty gods, as Huck would say, 3 out of 5 out of 5. Lillian waiting for the live feed. Anyone there? I responded, almost ready. Adam was working.
All right, never mind that bit.
Reese, please remember, Adam's got to watch the latest episode before we start. It's ended and we're setting up. Jeff says, I'm scared to ask what a wet willy is because I'm guessing it means something different from what I know it is. I posted the Urban Dictionary definition. Mary said, you wet your finger and stick it in someone's ear. Jeff said, Christ, that's a poke in the lug. What the hell is wrong with people? He must not have had it done to him when he was little. I sure did. I was bullied. Robert Wince says, what was worse, that or having your underwear pulled? I don't know what this picture is. Can someone explain that to me?
That's Captain Obvious.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's Captain. Okay, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from some advert or some variety.
No, it's not very obvious.
We'll read the quote and you'll understand why.
You know it's cold outside when you go outside and it's cold. Okay. Oh, and it says Captain Obvious in very small letters underneath. I see. I won't read.
No, you Ian won't. Kirk's. That's very good. Well done, Kirby.
He does say Ian Kirk has another thing. The creature the girl in Aleppo imagined looked like the Id monster from Forbidden Planet. Perhaps she'd seen the film. I disagree, and I was going to find images of both. But
I also disagree because she's from Aleppo in a long time ago, 700 years.
Right.
Now, I don't know if there's anything else past that. Let me
there
refresh.
Isn't. No, there isn't. I should really mention what's been coming through on the live feed. I didn't mention that Terry Miles said, "Hi, Adam, enjoyed this one, but I'm getting fed up with the message at the end of BBC Dramas saying if you have been affected by this podcast, ring the BBC for a recorded message." Yeah, it's true. But they all do. It's not just the BBC. ITV do it. And the only place that don't do it are Netflix and Amazon and streaming services. But,
and look at it this way. You might be getting sick of it, but it might be the thing to spur someone who needs
indeed
help.
Indeed, it might, yes.
Get the help.
And then we did Jeff Waddle said, "The red mark on the empty seat is Sutek." And then he says, "If this episode encourages one person to go and get help for mental health issues, job done. And to hell with the viewing figures." And then he says, "This thread is severely lacking a picture of Lillian's legs, or better still, a picture of Lillian's boobs."
Oh my.
And segued. I just love Mary's sort of grunt of the indignation and disapproval. Right then. So I suppose we better move on to another load of feedback. If I can get this loaded up properly, it should do this.
Hello, Twins and Mingmat Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Last week, I said astronauts wear orange pressure suits, not white. Two listeners sent me direct messages with photographs to show I was wrong. Well,
Kirby.
I'd been hit over the head with a Doctor Who story, so I might have had a mild concussion. Adam's smart speaker was supposed to respond like this. Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
Banner says, "We don't want your sort in here." Jack Harkness walks into a bar on Gallifrey.
Ouch.
"Can You Hear Me?" by James and Chibnall. Probably the best story this year.
Yes.
We get to see why Yaz became a policewoman.
Yep.
Also, Yaz and Ryan seem to be getting ready to join the time-travelling diner with Lady May.
Yes, please.
We've had a story about people's greatest fears before. That one in the hotel, the God Complex, with Matt Smith. Mm.
Well done, Ian.
The message this time was mental illness, but it did not feel preachy this time.
Agreed.
What sound does a hamster make?
Most of the time, hamsters say squeak squeakity squeak, but when their cheeks are full of food, they say squeak nom 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 squeakity nom nom squeak.
Bye for now.
I think Ian's been playing around with a certain echo gadget.
I think so. I give that feedback 5 floating fingers out of 5.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I'm one of the ones that sent him a picture of the
pressure. How did I know?
Well, the one I provided was from Big Bang Theory.
Oh, yes.
So.
Was that soft
Howard,
kitty,
warm
kitty, little ball of fur, happy kitty, pretty kitty, is that it? I've forgotten the words. I haven't listened to it for a while. Sleepy kitty, isn't it? Happy kitty, split kitty, sleepy kitty, purr. See, I know my bloody soft kitty songs.
Never heard it.
You haven't heard the Soft Kitty song?
No.
Have you ever seen The Big Bang Theory?
Hardly ever.
Well, there you go, then.
Lucky you.
No. Did you say lucky you?
I did.
Right, where's that sound effect?
Well, I'll help correct that.
That's point deducted for Reese. Right, then. So, yes, we got some more feedback. I do apologise, Reese put me off. So,
I do.
Yes, you did. And so for that, you're going to get this coming through on your message feed.
Oh, crud.
I was going to say, you know, Reese with his dramatic training would be a good one to read it.
No.
Then you can give it to whoever suggests somebody else get it.
Yeah, I wish you'd suggested it.
Right.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Wait, where's the start of it? I've got the other one as well. There we go.
The start of it's at the top. There's quite a lot of it, actually, recently.
There is.
My goodness.
Do we want to... Never mind. No.
No.
You'll say no.
No.
I'm not even going to read the second word.
Yeah, you will. I don't know. No,
well, this is where we use Google to see if you get it right. Hang on. I was going to... Where's Google up here? Our good old friend, the multimedia... franchise, is that the right word? That is Google. Go on then, Reese. I'll see if we'll see if we can get it right. Go on him.
I could get psychotherapeutic, and then I'm going to be stuck on the second word, which is I can't even figure out how to start it.
Oh dear, I pressed the wrong button.
You did? Oh, well done.
Hang on. Carry on.
I'm not going to be able to get it.
Hang on. I can't get this
word.
Give it
a go, and I'll give it a go.
Don't send me the whole thing. Send me the word.
Send him the whole thing.
It's done it wrong again. Carry on. Skip the word. I'll see if I can get it to... Oh, here it is.
Otorhinolaryngology.
Do you get that?
Otorhinolaryngology.
Otorhinolaryngology. There we go.
Or the Celestial Fearmongers Digital Edition. Dear 20 megabiters... Can You Hear Me? Is, of course, a closely studied character piece employing various aspects of mental health issues and anxiety to define and take forward the overall frame of the TARDIS crew's personal interactions and paths forward. I nearly made it through without breathing to that full stop, but I didn't. Graham's mortality, grief and guilt, Ryan's insecurity about becoming detached from his life, and Yaz's uncertainty as to whether she's reverting to running away from her realities are all covered in this deeper insight. The Doctor's anxiety over her unaccustomed state of confusion about her past and future also features. Actually, that's a great observation that I didn't notice. I thought that her anxiety in the episode was actually talking with Graham, but she has been shaken by the whole events of Gallifrey. Anyway, yes. I'll get back to it, but that was a good observation that I hadn't noticed. In many ways... By being confronted by these fears, our new crew are lent a hand by Zelen, or at least some fingers. Resolving the story through the mastery of fears of someone from any early scenario where mental health issues were recognized is obvious. Also a steer from what must face the cast in the near future. So we must read this tale as an opportunity to reposition the Doctor and her fam in the run-up to an almighty climax, unassisted by immortal fingers. It should be noted that whilst some suggest the Doctor's behaviour at the end of the episode to Graham was terrible, in fact it was just a reality of how difficult, even for the most confident of people, personal matters can be, and it played out in a realistic way.
Correct.
Yes, I think so as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We also learned that there are another two pan-dimensional hyper beings in the Eternals, Guardians and Toymaker's extended family. These being the Eternal Fear Specialists must make us wonder whether the Guardians are the Love and Hate Specialists and the Toymaker is the Pride Specialist.
Mm.
That's an interesting take on that. All in all, Can You Hear Me? Is a well-constructed setup for what might be the ongoing narratives for our TARDIS crew, and which could be struggles that will lead to the exit of up to all of or none of them over the next few episodes. As such, it once again manages the historically large number of regular cast members very well. Atmospherically handled the episode's protagonist. Impressed and... Oh, God,
hang on. You should
have
put a comma in there.
Yeah. I'm trying to as I go along, as Debbie suggests, but I'm putting them in the wrong spot, I think. Atmospherically, handled the episode's protagonist, impressed and... I think, actually... That might
you
be...
You think, anyway. Actually? I don't mean that being in there.
It's not in there. I'm just trying to get a hang of it. And whilst their vanquishing was rather hastily effected... The means was credible and fitted to the theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that too. It was done at the end, but it was all set up during that that exposition that bored Mary, but it made sense. This episode is perhaps approximately an eternity too short since we don't get to see a conclusion to Zelen and Tybo's story. Just a temporary detention circumcised by the inevitable release due to
circumscribed, not circumcised. It's not a medical procedure for Jewish people. No, circumscribed.
Right, yes, Adam, how about you finish it off then, if you'd like?
No, carry on. It's nearly done.
Okay, just a temporary detention circumscribed by an inevitable release due to the immutable physical realities within the paradigm of eternity.
Indeed.
You can explain that one to me later on. Next up, Doctor Who and the Return of Mary Shelley, or how about writing the most gruesome, spine-tingling ghost story of all time? Badly. My thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
No spoilers there. Yes, thank you very much, Mr. T. Butcher.
That's a quote from the trailer. It shouldn't be too bad.
All right, whatever. Yeah, good. I think that's about it for feedback. I don't think anything else come through. Thanks, everyone, for not being bothered to send in feedback to the show. That rather leads me to move
on. That's a lot of feedback.
No, it isn't. And so does this.
Otorhinolaryngology.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Yeah, that one.
So I think we'll probably be best to move on to the quiz.
What?
No, I'm only joking. You won't get this one. Returns in a few weeks' time, but not yet.
No.
Yes, I'm eager to open up my box of new questions. Anyway, right, so Doctor Who.
No, I want the questions to be based on the story.
Well, tough.
Yes.
All right, then. So, Praxeus official ratings. It had 5.22 million viewers in the end, which isn't too bad. It's made it 12th most watched BBC television programme for the week and 28th across all television. It had a 23.5% share of the total TV audience. And it just beat Dancing on Ice. Whee! Then, of course, Dancing on Ice does deserve a mention because Berman is on it. He's on the judging panel. Just so I'll say that. I think there was a point, actually, in Dancing on Ice when there was a behind-the-scenes sequence in which John Barrowman said, "Jack's back!" So that was quite interesting. Can you hear me? Overnight viewing figures. 3.81 million overnight viewers. So that means they watched it overnight, I suppose.
And that a long time.
Yeah, represented 18.8% of the total viewing audience and make Doctor Who the seventh most popular show on British television on the day it went out. And it was beaten by Dancing on Ice. But as we know, when it comes to the final viewing figures, that it will overtake it, because that always seems to happen every week.
And people keep predicting this is the end of Doctor Who.
Well,
I think,
if what's his name? The bloke who was running Doctor Who in the mid-80s. Not Doctor Who, BBC. Sorry, not Doctor Who. Michael
Grade?
Yeah, if he was currently the BBC Director General, yes. But it never would have gone back onto the TV if that is a chance, you know. So no, it's I think the way the BBC is going to move forward now, and I finally agree with it's now time this day and age for the license fee to come to an end, and the BBC to become a subscription service. That way, I'll pay a subscription to watch BBC, not just because of Doctor Who, but because I love what the BBC stands for. I love the programmes it produces, the quality it produces, and therefore I'm happy to pay my subscription, and other people are not. And they deserve not to pay it if they don't want to watch the BBC. But, you know, you've got to bear in mind, say if all something comes on they really, really want to watch, they will have to pay for it, and people will realise that the BBC is worth paying for. But I think that's the way we're going for it. You know, the BBC could become an extremely good subscription service. It should have happened probably a couple of years ago, to be fair, when Netflix and Amazon Prime started really pushing forward. And yeah, that'd be interesting to see what happens there. But it's the news is that the license fee has become, not having a TV license, sorry, is going to be coming uncriminalized.
I wonder if that streaming service will be available in the US.
I think it would have to be, because they will need to open up their field of viewing to claw in the money they would have done.
You've got to bring in enough money, probably, to produce the programming.
Yeah, they're going to have to go international to, you know, to get subscribers, like you say, in America, Canada, Australia, which will get them. There's people around the world love the BBC's output. And I think that will work for them in regards to...
I enjoy the BBC output.
So, interesting to see what happens there, and I hope it works for the BBC.
I've just noticed something interesting. Ian Gelder, who played Zelen in this episode, also did the voice of the Remnants from the Ghost Monument. So he's the first person to mention the Timeless Child.
In the episode featuring the Ghost Monument?
Yeah, he was the voice of the Rags.
And it mentioned the Timeless Child?
Yeah.
In that episode?
That was introduced way back in Jodie's second episode.
I didn't know that. Well. Shows I should pay a bit more attention, really, doesn't it?
Yes.
Right. So, next week... Oh, actually, I suppose I should do the sponsors, because we haven't done them for a couple of weeks. Let's see what we've got going on there with our good old whoone.co.uk.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
I still haven't sent the invoice to Lavazzi, or Who Won, for that matter. Who Won... whoone.co.uk. latest products, Doctor Who magazine 548, which has an alternative cover going on thing with the 13th Doctor or the Master on it, depending on which one you want to have. Image of the Fendal audio book, Paradise Lost, looks like an audio book featuring the 11th Doctor. Doctor Who magazine 54 2020 yearbook. And then Doctor Who magazine 547 is still available, previewing Orphan 55, Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror, Fugitive of the Jadoon, What a Story, and Praxis. What did you think of Fugitive of the Jadoon, Rhys?
I loved it. I actually did a reaction video to the first half of it, because I had technical issues for the second half, but I just thought it was exciting. I thought having Jack back was excellent, and just, I love it when we've had a few episodes now where we get an extra Doctor thrown into the mix.
Yeah, so we get the extra Doctor and Jack in the over the next episode. And the Master. Yes,
no,
and
master.
The Master.
Was there any mention of the Ruth Doctor in tonight's episode?
Shut up, Kirby. God's sake.
My prediction is that we're not going to hear any more about Ruth or Jack or... the Master until the closing two episodes, which
probably
I'm sure
hear a mention of them, whether they appear in them, I couldn't tell you. I'll tell you what, some figures coming out, which are rather cool. There's a Graham O'Brien posable action figure, which looks a little bit like Bradley Walsh. And there's also the Jadoon Captain, which I presume was the female Jadoon that we saw in the... that story you just mentioned, right? Psychic Circus by Stephen Wyatt is a audio book featuring the I'm trying to get the picture up here, but it's got the 7th Doctor, the bloke that was in the galaxy, what's that one, the Sylvester McCoy story. I keep on thinking Guardians of the Galaxy, but no, it's The Greatest Show in the Galaxy, wasn't it? Looks like it was the sequel to The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. I can't quite see who the other characters are on the picture, actually, but that looks quite good. That's a coming soon pre-order from whoone.co.uk. Lavazzi, and I keep saying this, I don't know if it's sinking in yet, Lavazzi do the best replica 4th Doctor scarves available to buy anywhere on the planet. So if you're a Doctor Who fan and you haven't got one of these, I really don't know what's going on with you. But there you go. Just saying. They do also have... garments relating to programs like Sherlock and Star Trek, along with normal clothes, funny enough. So there you go, lavazzi.co.uk. So,
hey Kirby, I want to do a 4th Doctor cosplay. Where could I get a good scarf?
I just said where you can get a good scarf. Oh my god. Sorry, I've just been segued because I've just been looking down through the comment feeds on the Trying to Make About Doctor Who podcast live. And Lillian Robin has posted the link, presumably for... God, I'm trying to think to answer Jeff Waddle's question. I don't know whether to click on it or not. Okay. And Robert Wentz Jr. says, watching the video for the first time. Hi, all. Hello,
hi.
Robert.
I just clicked on the link. It's a picture of her wearing Doctor Who capri leggings.
Good. Huh. And then Robert Wentz Jr. says, reminded me of Night of Terrors with Amy and Rory. Well, there you go. So it's amazing how Doctor Who sort of had so many stories out now that everything reminds somebody of something in the history of Doctor Who, doesn't it?
I know. I saw the TARDIS in this episode. I saw it last time, too.
But there you go.
I wonder why that keeps turning up.
Oh, well, this is interesting.
Oh, yes.
Jeff Waddle has posted this evening that it was an absolutely brilliant episode of Doctor Who, outstanding. So I can't wait to see it.
Am I allowed to say I liked it? Am I allowed to say that? Because I think other people haven't.
Jeff has loved every episode of this series.
Who yeah, has? He has.
Oh, yeah, he has.
Unfortunately, he even liked Orphan Boring.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say I might have to watch that again and get another...
I think he's had a brain transplant or something.
Yeah. But anyway, so that next week we'll be looking at the episode we just watched today, which I forget the title of. Reese is going to remind me.
Some of us haven't watched...
Exactly.
What's it called, Reese? I've forgotten.
What?
The story was out today. Well, the titles have been released.
I don't know what it's called today.
They have released the titles, and I can't remember. Hang on, let's see if I can find them. I've lost my DoctorWhoNews.net page. Oh, blast. I don't know. There's the current episode of Doctor Who that's just been on. Excuse me. Oh, dear.
Jeff Waddle has posted in the Soft Kitty, Wet Willy, what the hell is going on here? I thought this is Doctor Who podcast.
Kitty, warm kitty, little ball of fur. Happy kitty, pretty. Sleepy kitty. It's a happy kitty, sleepy kitty, a bit I'll get wrong.
Too Soft Kitty.
I'll try again. They all fall asleep, won't they? Soft kitty, warm kitty, little ball of fur. Happy kitty, sleepy kitty, purr, purr, purr. Get in.
Penny.
Right then, there was
Penny.
Yeah. Oh God, I love that program. Right then, so I've just been watching the ones where Howard's sort of coming to the end of his time as an astronaut. So funny.
Spoilers.
Right then. So next week, it's the next episode, which I forget the title of. I've been rather busy. We'll be back at the same sort of time, around the 10 past.
The Haunting of Villa Diodati.
That's what it's called. Something like that, Kirby. Yes. Between 10 and quarter past 8 GMT. And then, of course, we've just got two more episodes, or that's the second to last, isn't it?
Yes, two more.
Is it two more included in that one?
No, it's
no two more after tonight.
Yeah, so and then it'll be a review of the whole
story.
Then we'll do our usual, you know, review of the series, decide which is the worst, which is the best, etc. Like we do every time, and then we might
be. There's no question as far as which is the worst.
Hopefully,
yes, there is. We haven't seen them all.
Hopefully,
yet.
We'll get Debbie Melrose's synopsis on Sophie Aldred's book and get Sophie on the show before we embark back on the journey again. Which we, if you want to be reminded on that, Ark of Infinity is the next story. So,
which is one I haven't seen. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. Anyway, until then, thank you for supporting the show. That means watching it, taking part, sending a feedback, joining the group, preferably to actually listen to the show. It is a podcast at the end of the day. And until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Weekly Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.